the weakest of the gods. From The Gods Have Horns by Saltiside and Shadow Wasserson. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based upon the works of Andrew Hussey. One. Neverland.
Be past Tavros. You always thought you were kind of the weakest of the gods. Not because breath is like a shitty aspect, but more because you never really went that high up the god tiers, and pages are like supposed to have further to go than most. You don't mind that much, though. You don't need lots of flashy powers to enjoy life. You wander, you fly. You sometimes accidentally run into other gods or hear them calling your name from afar. You rarely answer them. Generally speaking, other trolls have not been kind to you, and you much prefer the company of beasts. Just because you all turned into immortal gods with robes and wings and shiznasty powers doesn't change that basic fact. You don't hang around the aliens much either. You might stumble upon some accidentally if they're in that span of time between when they start talking and when they start building cities, but you don't stick around long. After locals spot you, they tend to say your name for thousands of years afterward. It's a little annoying. So you find worlds of animals, worlds upon worlds, where only animals walk, where nobody splits the air with speech. You're not all that lonely. You tell yourself you're happy. You can hear Eridan calling your name sometimes. You don't ever say his. You are reclining under a tree in the moonlight on a vast savanna, listening to chirping night critters writing beat poetry in your head to their songs. Then you see the lights moving above. A spaceship. You are not afraid, but you are cautious and disappointed. You'd rather that a star-faring civilization not colonize this world. It's always a pain to have to find a new planet to live. The starship comes to ground like a massive, bloated whale, and you know even before it lands that it's not a regular alien ship. It's bedecked all over in banners and streamers and flags, those sorts of decorations you're pretty sure don't usually survive on spaceships. They burn up. And you recognize the sigil on the banners, the aspect of rage. You haven't seen Gamzee in, well, probably eons. But you don't really keep track of time anymore. He stopped calling your name after only a few years, when you first split off from the rest. And out of the tent steps... Whoa, he's tall. You shouldn't be surprised. You all can basically look however you want now, within trollish reason. Like you can have working legs when you want, which you usually do. Also, you can look more like an adult if you want, but you usually don't like to. You like the way you feel when you look young. But Gamzee must be 8 feet tall at least, not counting the horns. He's wearing a black and purple vest and a fancy coat, striped pants, and heavy boots. You can't see his face clearly from under your tree, but you're certain he's still wearing his subjugulator paint. You should go greet him, right? Maybe you can convince him to leave this planet alone for whatever it is he's doing, but he's all dressed up and you're basically just wearing your godhood. You quickly try to make yourself presentable, dredging an old hat with a feather in it out of your Silvadex, even though the green clashes. You wish you had some real pants. You feel kind of silly for being nervous, it's just Gamzee, right? Gamzee is talking with one of the aliens, but he looks up as you approach, and yes, it's still Gamzee. He still has that lazy, satisfied expression, though his purple eyes have a degree of intensity you don't remember being there before.
Tavros, he says,
his voice a low rumble that makes your horns vibrate. And here I thought you'd up and died ages ago, brother.
Miracle.
Ah. You reply, no, I'm alive. I've been alive this whole time, I think.
None of us had our knowing on about that there thing what you said.
You feel a little bad now. You might have told them that you were alive at least. When you speak, your tone is a little defensive.
I've been exploring and communing with the animals. It's peaceful out here, and no one judges me.
Gamzee's painted brows crease, but then he smiles.
Brother, why don't you come inside? See my ring?
Sure.
You follow him behind a curtain and into his ship. Inside is a maze of purple shadows, and it smells bitter and musky. You can see aliens of various shapes and sizes running around through curtains and around mirrors. You can hear distant screaming, or maybe it's laughing, maybe it's applause. The circus music is deafening and the air is full of smoke. By the time Gamzee and you reach your destination, your eyes are watering. It's at the very top of the tent, a wide balcony from which Gamzee can look over the rings being set up and the savannah, your home, stretching to the horizon. There's an alien there, its face painted in black and white, and Gamzee waves a hand at it.
Fuck off.
It fucks off. Gamzee settles himself in a chair, or maybe a throne, facing the balcony. You are amazed at how comfortably he fits there, fits here. How naturally he seems to take up divinity. Not even a moment of hesitation. Every inch a god. You're almost envious.
Lots to do here, brother, he says. We meet in a time of miracle and wonder.
What are you here to do? You ask.
Spread the mirthful word, my brother. Ain't been a whole planet devoted to the carnival. Not yet.
He smiles lazily, and maybe there are a few more teeth in the grin this time.
High time for that a-gettin' been done.
The whole planet?
You can't keep the surprise from your voice. Not just, like, one city.
Nah, brother, got to think bigger than that. Nothing but tents and rings and sideshows and freaks far as your motherfucking gander bulbs can see, and then more.
Gamzee gestures towards the edge of the balcony. Then he looks back at you, folding his long arms and relaxing against the back of his throne.
But enough all and about me, my inverted bro. What is all up and happening with you?
Gamzee, that's all very nice and all, but I'm not sure that's all a good idea. Turning the planet into one big, circus.
Gamzee frowns and for a moment narrows his eyes at you. You take a step back. Then he's smiling again.
Brother, I know we ain't got our squawk on in millions of sweeps and all, so you don't got it in your pan that I got my motherfucking understand on what all this is about, you dig?
What?
Rage, brother. You even know what rage is all about?
Not, really. I mean, I know what it means, being angry, but it's probably more than that, because breath is about more than, you know, breathing.
What's breath about?
You blink in surprise.
What?
I want you to get me all up in the school feeding tab, bro. What's your motherfucking aspect all getting itself about?
Breath. You know what it is. You know it in your core. Like the sigil has been branded into your think pan, which it probably has now that you think of it. Breath is freedom, unfetteredness, the feeling of responsibilities being shed, of being light as air, of being held accountable for nothing. You think you've done a pretty good job of being breath?
Freedom?
You say eventually, uncertainly. Breath is freedom?
Gamzee laughs.
You don't see what is so funny.
Oh, brother, I'm all about that, too.
Huh?
Gamzee leans forward and his voice quiets.
Rage, brother. Rage is the hole what's left when freedom's gone. Rage is the thing in your think pan that makes you stop, makes you hesitate. And I kill that.
I motherfucking kill that!
You jump at the change in volume, then feel immediately sheepish.
Aw, Tav, bro, didn't mean to scare you. It's all good and miraculous that every single one of my motherfucking followers has all their rage gone. Would be a better motherfucking world if everyone just said what's on their motherfucking mind and did what they motherfucking wanted. Freedom, brother, don't you agree?
You swallow. I'm not sure I understand. I thought you were a bard. You don't destroy directly, right?
He shakes his head. Nah, brother. But it goes and shrivels and dies all on its own. Here, I'll up and show you.
He rises and walks to the edge of the balcony, looking out over the savannah. The animals here have never seen aliens before. They only look up curiously. They don't run as Gamzee's followers set up the circus.
He points. See that motherfucker over there?
You go up and look. It's one of Gamzee's followers, a funny-looking red alien with four arms.
He's been wanting to do something, but ain't letting himself do it, and that ain't no way to be thinking in my carnival.
Gamzee looks at you and smiles, mouth friendly and eyes hard.
Don't want none of that in my carnival, brother.
The red alien, who had been focused on erecting a large pole, turns to a brown, furry alien next to him. And without hesitating a moment, he reaches up and rips out the furry alien's eye and eats it. You don't watch the rest?
I think that's kind of sick,
you manage to say eventually.
Did you make him do that?
Gamzee actually looks confused.
It's freedom, brother. It's only what he wanted all up and to do. All in real life, like.
He must see the distress in your expression because he then follows that up with,
we do the same thing, Tav, bro. You and me.
No, I...
You don't know what to say. He's going to make your planet, you can't help but think of it as yours, your whole planet, be like that without restraint or empathy or kindness.
I don't think it's the same thing at all.
Gamzee frowns, then just as quickly smiles again.
Sure thing, bro. We don't gotta work together. Though it'd all make me as happy as motherfuck if we up and did.
He turns to look at the view again.
You can still up and stay if you want to get your watch on, my brother. Or go on chilling with the birds and bees if that's what speaks to you and all.
Gamzee, you say after a moment, can you, use a different planet, maybe. I kind of like this one.
He looks at you, sidelong, and says nothing.
Like, I like it how it is, not made into a carnival.
You trail off.
This is a good place for a carnival, bro. It's not like you were up and using it.
Gamzee, I was kind of living here.
It's not like you wrote your motherfucking name on it!
Gamzee whirls, and his appearance is transformed. His fangs are bared, expression furious, and the scleras of his eyes blaze more orange than yellow.
Tav, bro, you ran. You can't claim nothing.
Not motherfucking nothing!
Ain't even acting a real god. Just running around playing like you're
still a motherfucking kid!
This planet is motherfucking mine, brother. Can't claim nothing. And I am going
to destroy this motherfucking planet.
And there ain't nothing you're gonna do about it, are you?
You sit down. Hard. You are sitting in a four-wheel device. You didn't realize you still had one. You're not sure if you can move your legs, actually, or feel them.
Didn't motherfucking think so.
Gamzee turns to look back at the carnival and you. You can feel it. The animals. Ripping into each other, killing mates, killing young predators, going mad. Fear aggression spiking into suicidal terror. He's wiping out the whole planet. Your planet. By now, your communing abilities are highly developed. You're more powerful than the summoner, more powerful than any mortal troll could ever have been. But when you reach out to get the animals to stop, you can't. Divine power trumps psionics, it seems. You have divine power, you are the page of breath, but if this is freedom, what can breath do? You wish you were a seer, then you'd know. But you're no seer. Barely even a page, you're sitting there trapped in your chair like a fool. The clown has made a fool of you. Then you realize, no, you just want to be free of him, you just want... And that's when you get it. You really, actually get it. Gamzee, you say slowly. I think there might be two kinds of freedom.
What the motherfucker you talking about? He rumbles.
Yeah, there is freedom too. That's your kind of freedom. But I think my kind of freedom is freedom from, which is different. So that's, I think, what I'm going to do.
You breathe, and they are free. All of them. The animals, the followers, free of their burdens, they are free now of Gamzee. They can do what they want to, really want to, and not just reflexively enact their most base impulses. You can hear cheering from below, or maybe screaming, maybe applause.
What the fuck did you do?
Roars Gamzee, turning on you.
You do not need to be afraid of him. You are free of your fear. You spread your wings. The chair is gone. Why do you need wheels when you can fly?
I think I'm doing what I need to do,
you say.
Which is to say, stop you.
The wind whistles around you, forming a howling cyclone that drowns out the circus music, lifts ship and tent and ring and blows them away like a heap of fallen leaves, and Gamzee is roaring and laughing and screaming, and you feel his psionics prickling at the edges of your mind. You summon your lance, and he his clubs. And then... it is the first time, but not the last. You fight another god openly. It is the first time, but not the last. You truly feel divine. Your planet, at least, dies free. 2. A Passover Story. There are words on the wind. You hear them, spoken. Prayers. Your name. And you are the page of breath, so you give them breath. You can break their chains and open their doors, only you. The mortals love you, they love you. You offer them liberty. You lift the downtrodden and help them to topple tyrants. You follow the whispers of their breath in your ears. You feel, in a way, like you're actually important. The feeling swells as the centuries pass and turn into millennia. The people who came from the east are suffering. The hot sun. The burn and bleed of the whip. They sorrow, they hunger, they ache for a better life. They are slaves and they are calling to you from the desert sands, voices echoing through the dust. You make your landing by the river. And you walk through the town. A guard at the slaves' quarters sees you, and mistakes you for a child before he realizes that your horns are real. He is fearful, but you simply move past him and blow open the doors.
Your freedom is yours, if you want it,
you say to the huddled mortals within. They don't move.
Do you know who I am?
You reach out your hand to them and smile.
I am the page of breath. Don't be afraid. I won't hurt you.
They don't move. Please, come with me, you say. You are the page, and you can't force them to do anything, only give them the opportunity they need to seize freedom themselves.
We can't, page, speaks up one woman finally. We are bound.
Take off your bindings, you say. They are nothing like air. You can stand with me if you try.
We cannot, says the woman. We are bound by blood.
You have to let that sink in for a moment before you realize what she's saying. The wind whips up as you call your aspect. You reach towards the mortals, and you can feel the bonds like heavy rope tying them to this land, to the king who commands them, and in thick, clotted strands to the night. You could break them. It would be within your power to simply rip up Karkat's curse like spider's silk. But it would probably kill the mortals to do so. You realize that is something you could do. Charge in like an enraged hoofbeast in a dishware establishment, smash everything, let them die free. You don't do that. Instead, you leave for a distant dune top, where you cannot see or sense anyone but a few desert invertebrates, and you call Karkat's name. The Knight of Blood is standing in front of you. He's never been one for showy appearances, not like Gamzee or Vriska or Kanaya or Eridan. Instead, he usually dresses even drabbier than his godhood, wearing a simple black cloak with no sigil, as he is doing now. He opens his mouth, but you speak first.
What is going on, I mean, with the mortals here? They're slaves. And it seems to me that you made them slaves. Why would you do something like that?
Tavros, he says, please butt the fuck out of my business. You frown.
That was not an answer to my question.
Karkat groans and facepalms.
Look, it's a long story. Can we go somewhere else to discuss this, like some place not in the middle of bumfuck nowhere?
You have to remind yourself sometimes that not everyone likes to be in the middle of the wilderness like you do. You find it calming.
I think, you say, that this is a pretty good place.
Karkat squints at you, then rolls his eyes and decapsulates a chair to sit in. You remain standing. You like to stand. When he doesn't offer any information, you press again.
So, those people, the slaves, why are they bloodbound?
Do you even know who these mortals are? Asks Karkat in reply. Did you even do the slightest bit of cursory research on them, or did you just trip over them and decide it was your business to fuck around with them?
It is my business, you reply. Because they prayed to me, and because my aspect could free them but would probably kill them. Because it's mixed with yours.
Karkat's eyes narrow.
So is that what you're going to do? Kill off these people because your aspect lets you?
You shake your head.
No, I don't want to kill them. I want to know why they are slaves, and then for you to free them.
Karkat shakes his head.
I'm not going to.
Why? They—
Listen, Nitram. I'm not going to go over this twice. So just shut the fuck up and listen. These people here, the Koreshians, are the descendants and followers of this leader and warlord from a few generations back named Koresh. And he made a pact with the king here, the one who ruled the adjacent lands at the time, that he wouldn't attack their lands so long as the king let his people have safe passage. And of course, because they're mortals and they're fucking idiots and have no sense of proportion, they made it a blood pact. So they clearly didn't trust each other, which made sense, since after a few years, Koresh went and started raiding the kingdom's outlying settlements. Maybe he thought the king wouldn't notice? Maybe he thought I wouldn't notice? Fucking brain dead.
Karkat snorts derisively.
The stipulation of the blood pact was that he and all of his people and all their descendants and descendants' descendants had to serve the kingdom and all his descendants and blah, 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 blah. That's it. Fucking dirty politicians getting divinity involved in their contracts. It's bullshit, but there you go. End of story time.
You blink.
Wait, so these people are being punished because of something their ancestors did? How long ago was that?
Karkat pauses, tapping a claw against his chin. I'm not sure, not that long. A few centuries, I think.
But, I mean, I don't think their species lives that long.
Karkat nods. Yeah, their generation time is short, so what?
So, these people don't have anything to do with Koresh or the old king or whoever it was. They're different people.
They're Koreshians. They're not just linked by their bloodlines either. That's a big part of why they're slaves, but that's not all of it. They're sworn to him. They still label themselves with Koresh's name. They see him as their leader, their chief, their ancestor. So the blood pact applies to them. If they gave all that up, all of their culture of ancestor worship, and turned their backs on the history of their own people, the ties would be weak enough to break on their own. They wouldn't even need you to do it.
You mean, it's not even a physical blood thing? And you're not going to free them because of this silly rule about your pacts?
Karkat frowns and leans forward. It's not a silly rule. It's my fucking aspect.
Can't you just let them go this time? They didn't do anything, and it wouldn't hurt to make an exception and to be a little more flexible.
That would be numbfuck stupid. No, I can't make exceptions for every mortal that makes baby wolf beast eyes at me, on principle. If nothing else, it will be a warning for other mortals to not take blood packs lightly. It's not a thing you're supposed to do on a fucking whim.
You're feeling irritated now? You're doing this on principle? But it's just a rule.
And it's a rule I need to keep in place.
But
God damn it, Tavros!
He snaps.
Go on your way and butt the fuck out of this!
He's gone.
The Koreshians are sworn to serve the people of the kingdom. Breaking that promise to Karkat would likely backlash and kill all of them. But Karkat is too set in his ways, like he's bound up in them, chained to his own invisible rules. He can't seem to think around the problem. You were kind of pissed off at him, but more than that, you want to free him of his rigid way of thinking. So you go and talk with the Koreshians. You learn that they worship their ancestor, not like he's a god, but like he's watching over them, guiding them. They tell stories about him and talk about him a lot when babies are born and when people die. He's their identity, the remnant of a proud past, the only point of pride they have left. If they give up their culture, they could escape. Drop all ties with Koresh and they would no longer be bound. But you don't think they'll do this. So that leaves convincing Karkat. You'll need to be creative and sneaky, and you're not so good at that. But you know who is. She owes you a favor anyway.
You don't need to convince Karkat, she says, grinning. He cares about his pact holders, right? They're all family to him, right?
Then she tells you what she is going to do, and you talk her down to some less extreme methods, and she agrees, and she will only use them as a backup. So you go to the slaves, the once proud people, the Koreshians, and tell them to inscribe your sigil on their doors. So she'll know where to not strike. You float gently on the breeze, high above the city. They are building great monuments, aqueducts, temples, sculptures. The sun is shining on the redstone.
Free the Koreshians, please,
you say to Karkat after using his name.
Bad things are going to happen if you don't.
But he doesn't come. So now you're flying and you watch as Vriska Circuit flies below you. She turns to look up at you and gives you a wink. And then the sky goes black with soot. And then the hail comes, and the lightning. And then the crop blights, and the lesions, and the toxic algae that turns the water red. And then, every firstborn child falls into a coma. And you go to check.
but the slaves are still not free. Karkat Vantus, you say. You need to free the Caressians. Your pact holders are dying. You know that he can hear you, but he doesn't answer. Is he calling your bluff? Does he think that you wouldn't kill people who are bound by blood? He's right. You wouldn't. Vriska is shimmering and gleaming, radiant like a star in the sky with all the light she is taking. She grins at you and waves.
Plan B!
She laughs. The earth tremors and cracks, and the king and all his people and all his lineage are swallowed by darkness. The slaves, bound to a bloodline now erased, are free. The Caressians are free. And you are horrified. Don't be so sensitive, says Vriska, tossing her hair over her shoulder. I freed the slaves like you asked, didn't I? You gesture angrily. Yes. But you killed another group of people who had nothing to do with it. I told you that was Plan B. Vriska sounds utterly unconcerned. I think it should have been, maybe, Plan Z. Oh, please, Tavros. Like, continually tormenting them with plagues is better. I guess Karkat doesn't even care about his stupid oath. Vriska sneers. Anyway, bonds removed. Slaves free. You're welcome. Vriska, this is not what I wanted!
What do you wanted?
Vriska smiles sweetly. What did you want me to do? Keep killing babies until they all died of old age?
Boring, Tavros!
You know how I do things. You wanted me to do it. You should try to get your own pan sorted out before you... Ah, fuck, Karkat's here. Yes, he is. He's there. Dressed in his deep red godhood, red wings flashing for a moment before he tucks them out of sight.
Tavros, what the shit maggot fuck did you do?
See you later, Tavros, Vriska says cheerfully, and kisses you on the top of your left horn before flying off.
Mortals can't just make blood pacts without thinking about the consequences. I don't see why these rules are so important. So you think every time a mortal breaks a promise, we should just swoop in and forgive them?
Karkat pinches his voice mockingly.
Oh, don't mind the fact that you literally swore on your freedom or your life that you'd do this thing. We don't mind. Mortals lie all the time anyway, so there's no reason to have an ironclad way of making them swear the truth.
You cross your arms. Not when people who weren't even involved are sworn in too.
They were still loyal to him. Fuck, Tavros! I thought you were going to try and break them of their cultural hang-ups, not fucking destroy the city!
You frown at him. That would have taken a lot of time. Why didn't you do that?
Oh, wow, shit, I don't know. Maybe I had other better things to do. You're the one who cared so much about this, not me. I mean, fuck, you're immortal. It's not like you don't have time.
Well, you should have cared. Since it's your rule that got them enslaved.
I stand by what I did. Mortals have to keep their responsibilities straight when they mess around with the divine. I'm not going to spend my time finding them loopholes to exploit. Besides, it was their choice to keep their traditions. Isn't that what you like? Choice?
It's not that simple. They were praying to me for help.
Oh, boo-hoo! How many people are praying to you right now? Tavros, that is a shitty-ass way to be a god. You have to pick your battles.
He's almost looking like he pities you now. You don't want pity from Karkat. He snorts.
I know better than to try and make you swear an oath, but don't mess around with my shit again, Tavros. This is a warning.
What about the Vriska?
I don't fucking care. She's your problem.
You're kind of relieved that Karkat didn't want to fight you? You'd hate to destroy another planet in your wake. So instead, you close your eyes and listen to the words and the universe's breath flowing through your mind like distant music. The Caressians no longer pray to you, but there are others. There are always others. You spread your wings. 3. Skylark.
Be future, Tavros.
Your name is Tavros Nitram. Today you are going to save the Earth. Strategy and warfare have never really been your favorite things to learn to do. But that doesn't matter. You're facing an opponent you cannot plan against, so you need to act quickly and decisively. You don't like fighting your fellow gods, and your usual technique of covering the world with a hurricane will not work here. So, this is going to be messy. It's too bad, since, well, you generally like Terezi. You extend your senses of animal communion, easily spanning the entirety of the planet. The footfalls of ants and the wing beats of pigeons tell you that she is in Times Square, New York City. She knows you're coming. There is no other reason she'd be in such a public, crowded place with so few animals. She knows you don't like fighting like this, not in public. Still, you're not going to be dissuaded. You breathe, and you're there.
Tav!
Is all she has time to say, before you hit her with a wall of wind like a freight train. She's laying a distance away, surrounded by scattered debris, chunks of cars, and injured and dead humans. She's stunned. You need to act quick. You make yourself a little bigger and older so you have more physical strength. Then you decapture along some rope. But she comes to before you can finish tying her arms. People are screaming all around, but she just says,
Tavros, you have better things to do.
You loop the rope around her throat and pull tight so you won't hear her talk. Sorry, you say anyway as she struggles and dies. I think Earth is worth it. You wish you had more arms. The clock is ticking. You need to finish tying her up fast before she revives. Not fast enough. A knife flicks out from her shoe. With a decisive kick, she buries it in your leg. Ouch. Good thing you don't need that shin to fly. She's on her feet and you're sitting on the ground. Her arms are tied, but not her legs. Before she can say anything, you send her flying with another blast of wind and fly after her as she crashes down. Terezi is bleeding, broken, but still alive and conscious. You fix that quick with your lance, and with shaking hands, tie a strip of fabric from your own godhood across her slack mouth to gag her before she revives. Really, really sorry, you say to her furious face as she wakes up. Her glasses came off somewhere with all the wind, and she looks very upset. But you're gonna destroy the world that we're all, using? So I need to do this. She tries to talk around the gag, kicks a bit, you dodge the knife shoes, then closes her eyes and seems to slump. You don't think she's actually giving up, but when she opens her eyes, they're full of tears. Oh no. I know about the doomed timelines, you say, words almost stammering, knowing you probably shouldn't be saying anything, but I mean, don't those last a while, even doomed? And also, we can work to find a way around this. We don't need to set off the game right now. It'll be okay if we wait. She's crying, head bowed, shoulders heaving with sobs. Your pusher twinges. You and Terezi used to be Moirails and other things besides, and those old feelings are bubbling up despite the vast stretch of time since you two were in any quadrant at all. You don't want to see her like this, tears flowing down her cheeks. It's too pitiful. When she's not sobbing, she's laughing. That's when she clocks you in the pan with the heel of a heavy steel-toed boot. And when you reel and clutch your head, she stabs you in the back with her knife shoe. It hits you right at the base of your cervical chitin and you collapse. You stare at her from the ground, shocked, as she contorts her left foot to cut the gag from her mouth. To get into the position, to cut free her arm, she had to dislocate her shoulder and shove it out of place. Her tears were from the pain, but she's grinning at you straight through them.
Tavros, don't be a fucking idiot,
she hisses.
Skaia won't wait forever. The players have to play while they're still viably young. But I know better than to argue the point.
With a snarl and a shudder, she pops her arm back into place.
You think that just because you can get the drop on me that you're a hard counter to my abilities, you're wrong. Still, I know I can't contain you. Instead, I'm going to ask you to consider all the other worlds, all the other places where you could be doing your work and helping people right now, instead of wasting your breath on a doomed planet. The Askelvi people still need your help. The servants of the Hespekin are calling for you. Leave Earth! Let the game sort itself out.
You wheeze from your position on the ground. You can't feel anything below your neck, and the breathing is possible but difficult. Why does this shit always happen to you? She turns and flicks out her wings, and she's about to leave you here. But you can't just let her do that. You may not get a second chance to track her down. You're not nearly as helpless as you look. The truth is, you've never needed your limbs to fly or fight, or a crow swoops down and plunges its beak into her eye. She can't see anyway, but it must still hurt, since she screams, swinging her arm and skewering the crow with a thin blade. Rats, cats, raccoons, pigeons, every creature from this city you could call come to the attack, some carrying in their mouths bits of glass, needles, nails, any sharp debris they could find, and fling themselves on her. She flies upwards with breathtaking swiftness, but you float up too, following her, keeping pace. You need to take her out one more time, to buy yourself just a single moment. She swats at the animals, claws them, flings them off, but a few of the rats chew through her wings and crows tear at her ears and lips. She snaps at them, but pigeons force themselves past her teeth and down their throat, choking on their feathers and their bodies. You're not much more than a floating head with a body that hangs limp and useless below you, but you don't need more than that. While she's preoccupied, you summon the wind and blast her downward back towards the ground. That probably won't be enough. You need something heavy to drop on her. You flick through your Silodex. There's a pretty big card in the back, something you think Aradia must have given you years ago. You decapture log it and drop it after Terezi. It's a huge steel coffin. Good. That should occupy her for a bit, long enough to fix yourself up. You drop a long, straight lance out of your specimen and, spinning it with the wind, orient it tip-up and blow it straight through your own pusher. Simple. You come to, whole, lying face down on the ground, with a raccoon licking the back of your head. You get the raccoon to leave, push yourself up, and look around. Human emergency personnel are running around with the noise of sirens. Some people are standing very near, staring at you. You should leave, you tell them as you float to your feet. Run! Don't get in the way of this. Terezi must also be alive again, but when you find her, she's pinned down by the coffin. You're surprised she hasn't called for help by now. The other gods must also be busy.
Is this really worth it, Tavros Nitrum?
She asks, sounding mostly annoyed even as she's half-crushed beneath the coffin.
You've already killed a lot of bystanders. I thought you didn't want to do that!
You pause a moment. Now don't think about it. She's just getting into your head. It's what she does. You say, need to stop talking. You smash her head in with the blunt part of your lance, then shift the coffin off her body with the help of the breeze. Then you drop her into the coffin and close the lid. It's a temporary measure, but it can buy you a moment to think. Even if she's not packing explosives in her Silodex, she has allies she can call to get her out. She could pray to Salix or Feferi, who would find it simple to dismantle the coffin, or Aradia, who would just wait for it to rust away to nothing. You need to stop her from doing that.
Tavros Nitrum, you can't silence me,
says Terezi, calling your name. You don't hear her with your ears, but with your constant awareness of prayers said in your name.
You know I'm right. If you succeed in creating a doomed timeline, we all face destruction. And you know it! Tavros Nitrum! Why are you doing this? There are better things for you to do! More important things to care about!
You ignore the teal. While she talks, you manage to maneuver a tiny insect into the coffin. That means it's not airtight, which means she won't suffocate, but also means that you have another option, though you don't want to do it. You don't want to do any of this. It's fighting dirty, fighting cruel. You don't like it. The breeze blasts the coffin out to sea with incredible force. It skips across the surface of the ocean like a small stone. And then further still, out beyond the shallow seas and into the deep, open ocean. There it stops. And the fish watch as it drops into the depths, trailing bubbles. The same wind also levels most of New York City. You sit in the ruins, with your head in your blood-stained hands, and listen to Terezi gurgling your name.
For the text of this and other stories by the same authors, visit the AO3 pages of Call Me Saltiside and Shadow_Wasserson. Suburban Jungle by Michael Guy Bowman. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find links to other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and various ways to support me. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.